Hey y'all, I'm Whitney Scarborough, the host of Wits End. Here we are real people asking hard questions. If you think you hear the hum of a fridge or a train in the background, it's because you probably are. We are recording these episodes from the comfort of my home in a small town called LaGrange, Texas.
Today, I sit down with Kristen Biker. She is a dear friend who shares vulnerably with us through tears and laughter about God preparing her for a really difficult time, about God's rich provision through so many unknowns, and raising a child with special needs. Let's dive in.
We're on. We're live. Okay.
Sorry, Callan.
Okay, this is so fun that we get to do this today, friend.
Yeah.
In person, actually.
I know.
Which is
what a gift.
Sweet gift. Mm-hmm. I know. You came in from Michigan for another Woven-related thing of getting to video some of the teaching material for our Bible study, for our relationship Bible study.
Yes.
And we got to sneak in a podcast, or we're getting to right now. So
yeah.
It's so fun. I'm so excited. So let's talk a little bit about how we met. So this is my dear friend, Kristen Biker, and you're going to get to hear from her today and learn more about her story. But I want to go back to the beginning and talk about how we met, because that in itself is a God story. And yeah, so you take it.
Yeah,
take it away.
Sure.
Yeah.
So let's see. I think it was like spring of 2011, and my husband, Joe, was deployed in Afghanistan. He was in the Air Force, and he was there with his good friend. He was deployed there with a good friend at the same time named Nate. And during that time, we just felt like God was calling us to overseas missions. And so he shared with Nate and said, "Hey, man, like, would you be praying about this? Like, we feel like God's calling to, you know, calling us to this." And so Nate asked a few questions, like, where would you want to go? What would you want to do? And he's like, "Well, like, you know, I speak Spanish. And so probably like somewhere in Latin America, like a Spanish speaking country. And then Kristen's a middle school science teacher. And, you know, I do finance. So something that would maybe a school."
Right.
a school in a Spanish speaking country.
And it's like
country.
So specific. You're like,
yeah.
That seems like a, like, really, are we going to really actually be able to meet all those things?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And so Nate was like, "Oh, hey, you know what? We have some family friends, like their daughter, I think, is like somewhere Bolivia, maybe, I don't know." And so he's like, "I'll reach out to her and I'll ask her." And so then Nate sent an email to Whitney.
Yes.
To you. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. So I remember I get this, this message, and, you know, it's basically just telling me all those things.
Mm-hmm.
And so I share it with my husband, I share it with our director, and literally it was like all the things that we needed at this school. So we were at a school in the Dominican Republic called Dulos Discovery School, and in this little town called Jarabacoa, and we're needing a middle school science teacher. And the school has never had, at that point, never had anybody help in the financial department. And so it was honestly this huge answer to prayer. And hey, they speak Spanish there too. So it's like, you know, and then you guys move there, and while you guys are kind of searching for a place, you guys come and live with us for a week or so. And it was like instant friend connection. Like, I feel like you guys instantly became like besties, and also like, you know, we just knew like we had this like lifelong, we're going to have this lifelong connection.
We had way too much fun together.
Way too much fun.
Yeah.
We did this like, okay, so again, we're living in, you know, in a foreign country. You don't have all of the, you know, I don't know, the entertainment, you know, there's no movies, or there's not all the
There
same
were, but
places.
They were like,
yeah, far
away,
right?
Yeah.
So it was just like, you find different ways to entertain yourself. So I remember, you know, one of the things that we would do was we would do things like, you know, food was a big deal, you know, like we would do, I remember y'all taught us like pizzas on the grill, right? But one of the things that we would do was, I think you showed us, it was like, "Have you guys ever seen this thing called Shark Face?"
Oh my
gosh.
We
were like, "What?" Are you literally
we
like,
were desperate.
You were so desperate.
What can we do
for entertainment? Like, how do we create connection here? And so literally you have to like, you know, it's kind of hard to explain, but I feel like you need to like have a picture in the show notes or something, but where you put your head backwards and then the top of your chin becomes like
the nose of the shark,
the nose of the shark, you put
the sunglasses like on top. Like, I don't know. It's
yeah. If you're listening, then you need to go home and try this. Look it up.
Yeah.
Shark face. And probably some of you have already done this. Like, I feel like it was like a trend on social media for a while, like posting shark face pictures. Yeah. So that was kind of how we bonded, but
yeah,
past the ridiculousness.
Hold on one moment though. But I just have to say, like, it's so funny. My first impression of you, like, I just never thought we'd be friends.
Oh no, I'm just learning this. Yes. Seriously?
Yes, because we were doing the whole couple shuffle thing and like
getting to go to all the houses.
Getting to go to all the houses. We were staying with Keith and Carrie Schoen.
You're staying with some different friends.
And, yeah. And you guys came over like our first night for dinner and you like walk in and you and Carrie are both like so artsy and so talented in that way. And you guys like just go off and start talking about all your art stuff and all your craft stuff. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm not going to get along with anyone here. I hate art and crafts. Like, oh my goodness.
This is not my thing.
This is not my thing at all. Like, yeah. Aww. And so, you know, a sweet little surprise. And I'm like,
I love that.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I don't know. I mean, super immature thing to think.
But no,
like,
it's so true. How many times have I had like just, you know, wrong assumptions about people when I first meet them.
Yeah.
And then God really humbled me in it. Like, no, actually, this is going to be your best friend.
Yeah.
You know,
well, and
they're going to be your lifeline here.
Yeah. And I was an athlete and like all of my friends growing up and like through college and everything, it was like, we always had that thing in common. And I came to Christ later in life. And so God was kind of teaching me that like Christ in common means way more than any of those earthly things. Right.
I love that. Yeah. That's so good. Okay, so speaking of that, you go on a women's retreat. Well, we both go together on a women's retreat, and the theme was especially significant and would come into play later on. So I'd love for you to talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, so this was our second year in the DR, and I was actually pregnant. I think I was like 7 months pregnant.
Yeah, with your first.
With my first, yeah. And the retreat theme was on fear. And I don't think anyone probably would have known this about me because I kept it all like very, very close. But I really struggled with fear and like irrational fear. And actually, I think I heard this word from one first from your mom. I was definitely a catastrophizer.
Yes.
You know, like... like my husband would leave, you know, to go somewhere and I'm like, he's never going to come back. And then I would go through like all the things in my mind of like, what am I going to have to do if he dies? And like, crazy rabbit holes of thinking that really like held me captive and, you know, impacted my relationship with him. Cause I wanted to be like, no, you can't go because if this happens, he's like, what are you talking about?
Yeah,
you
know? And totally.
Just, yeah. So really kind of this, paralyzing, irrational fears that I really struggled with.
Yeah.
And so you can imagine like living in the Dominican Republic, they're
right. Everyone's on motorcycles. Your husband has a motorcycle.
Definitely on blast there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The weekend was just like transformative. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I left a completely different woman. Mm-hmm. I think one verse that was especially impactful for me during that time was Joshua 1:9. That says, have I not commanded you, be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged, for the Lord your God will be with you wherever you go. And I think like just learning that like no matter what I go through, like whether my husband goes and gets in a moto accident or whatever happens and doesn't come back, God will be with me. And it just kind of like my thinking, like I was like, I don't have to worry anymore. Like, I don't need to go down those rabbit holes anymore. Like, I can just trust God who loves me, who calls me holy, chosen, and beloved, you know? Like, So it just completely, like, transformed my thinking. Wow. Really, like, in one weekend. Like, clenching onto things.
Yes.
To just really, like, suddenly living in this new, like, open-handed way that I'd never experienced.
That's awesome. Yeah. So... here you are.
Mm-hmm.
You're, you know, we're in a foreign country. I remember you telling me you know, first when you're pregnant and then walking through your pregnancy, because I had had our first in the Dominican Republic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just about a year before.
Yeah. You were like the reason why I was like, I think I can do this. Like that just went so like easily
it
for
went
them.
Smoothly, right?
Yeah,
and you're like, yeah.
It was really special.
Sign me up for that. Yeah. I remember still this moment of y'all calling right before you're going to the hospital to deliver and, you know, meeting up with you guys. And I feel like giving you like this some bag of
like I still have you like hospital. Wrote these like prayers for me on this big like
I don't even remember
I still
that.
Have it.
Oh,
yeah,
that's so cool. So I think I remember meeting up with you though in the car, and I remember you laying in the back seat like in labor, and you're like, no one told me it was this painful.
I mean, I think people do, but I was being a bit,
yeah. You're
a bit
like
dramatic.
I'm an athlete. Like I'm gonna be fine.
Yeah, probably. Oh my gosh.
And so talk about your memory of labor and delivery in the next 24 hours.
Yeah. So we lived about like 45 minutes or so from the hospital. And so we have like this long bumpy ride down to the hospital.
Right.
We get there around 11 a.m. And when we get there, like the way it worked there was they basically like cart me up to the labor and delivery floor. But then my husband, Joe, had to go down to billing to basically, like, you have to pay for it beforehand.
Yeah.
And so he's down in billing. I'm up by myself, like, probably for an hour. Like, it takes him a while. Like, billing's down in the basement, and it takes a while. And I'm up there, and they're, like, getting me all, like, you know, changed. And
ready, yeah.
A nurse comes in and checks me, and she's like, you know, like, wow. And I'm like, oh, what? Wow. You know, like,
is
I don't
a good
know.
Wow or a bad
yeah.
wow.
And she's like, wow, like casi ocho o nueve. And I'm like, like I was already at like an 8 or 9, you know, centimeters dilated. So then she's like, okay, like, you know, she's going to go get
this is happening fast.
Yeah. This is happening really fast. I'm like, where's Joe?
Yeah. You know, I want my husband to be here.
Yeah. And so then the doctor comes in and he like does all his things. And like, the only thing I remember is him saying preeclampsia. And so I was like, well, I think I can figure out what that word means. And so I had preeclampsia. And so still, Joe's not there. And they're like all of a sudden. And like,
and at this time, it's like your Spanish is still developing.
Yes.
There's all these things happening in Spanish around you. And you're like, I'm not quite sure.
Yeah.
I need Joe here to help me really understand exactly what's going on.
Yeah. And he was definitely like the Spanish, you know, the Spanish speaker. He was my translator in so many different instances. Like I got by fine, but then in this situation, first of all, I'm pregnant, so I have pregnancy brain,
right?
And I have preeclampsia, so I feel like that alone causes just this crazy fog.
Absolutely.
And so so I have preeclampsia. Basically, like my labor progresses super quick, and Hannah's born, like, you know, I think by 1 p.m
Wow.
And she's like, you know, held up to me and she's like this beautiful, healthy baby.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay. And, that in itself was a little traumatic. Like they wouldn't let me hold her or have her. They're like, your blood pressure has to come down before you can like hold your baby. And like, my blood pressure is high because I can't hold my baby.
Yeah. This
Give
is making
me my
it
baby.
Worse.
Yeah. Yeah. So finally, like they get us into a room. And things are going good. We ended up having to stay an extra day so they could monitor my blood pressure. But they're, like, getting ready to send us home.
Yeah.
And I think in that time, like, you had come with Emily and Charlotte to meet Hannah. And you brought her, like, her little lammy that she still sleeps with every night.
Yeah.
And so, we're, like, getting ready to go home. And they take Hannah back to give her a bath. And she doesn't come back. And the next thing we know, there's like the doctors are coming in and they're like, you know, speaking in Spanish. And I'm like, Joe, what are they saying? He's like, I think they said that she had a seizure. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wait, what? Like, what do you mean she had a seizure?
Yeah.
And so then like, you know, she apparently was in the NICU because while they were giving her a bath, the nurse noticed that she was having a seizure. And so then it's basically like trying to figure everything out, like what's going on with her. Like, and we found out that it was due to low blood sugar. Her blood glucose was dangerously low. And when that happens, basically like, your brain, like it's cutting off blood flow to your brain. You're not, blood sugar to your brain. You're not getting enough. And so, you have a seizure. And that next day, like, I just remember being like so frustrated, like, tell me what's going on. And one of the things in the DR that was really hard was in the NICU, like, you didn't have access to your kids. You could literally go two times a day for 30 minutes and hold your baby. And that was it. And so, like, I couldn't be with our baby. Like, the doctors were not being super communicative with us about what was going on. There's like, everything was in Spanish. Like, yes, so many, like, so many things that just were like. But the cool thing in all of it, really, like, the reason why Hannah's alive is because I had preeclampsia. You know, like, it's crazy to think, but, like,
they kept
that
an extra
preeclampsia was really, like, God's providence, God's protection over our daughter so that she could still be alive today. Because had we gone home and I had a normal birth and, you know, like, we would have been back in our little town, you know, 45 minutes from the hospital, and she probably wouldn't have made it.
Who knows? So... Okay, talk about your the state of your mind, your emotions. You have a daughter in the NICU with an unknown condition. You're still learning the language. You know, I remember, you know, I was obviously not walking in your shoes, but I remember seeing you guys walk through this, first-time parents, overwhelming, scared. You know, the situation's overwhelming. You're scared. It's terrifying. Walk us through the next couple of days and what it was like to be in your shoes.
Yeah. So, I mean, a lot of shock. But honestly, I feel like the thing that marked that time, like, maybe the two words that I would use to describe that time are peace and community. And so, just like experience this crazy supernatural peace during that time. And also, like, just had a really amazing community support that, like, wrapped their arms around us and helped us during that time. I mean, like, you and Tim were amazing. Like, you guys would come down, like, you'd get people to watch Charlotte, and you would come and, like, be with us at the hospital. We'd be, like, outside of my doctor's office, like, using his Wi-Fi, trying to figure out, like, where...
Doing your own research.
Doing our own research. Because the endocrinologist told us, like, if it were my daughter, I'd get her to the States. And the problem was we didn't have U.S. insurance. We only had Dominican insurance. And so we're like, how, you know, like, none of the hospitals in the States wanted, would take Hannah because she didn't have insurance. They needed us to pay up front. And they're like, here, pay $250,000 and like, fly your daughter on a medevac and then we'll take care of her. And we're like, we're missionaries. We don't have $250,000 plus, like, the $60,000 for the medevac.
Exactly.
Like, or I can't remember what
all the prices, it was exorbitant. I mean, it was like an overwhelming amount that you're like, no, we don't have that.
Absolutely. So, but yeah, it was just, this crazy piece. And then, community people would come and, like, bring us food. And later we found, like, heard all these really crazy stories of, like, how, you know, like, our phones were all on, like, minutes or whatever. We'd pay for, like, a certain amount of minutes. And so, like, apparently I heard, like, Tim would go walking around the school and be like, hey, the bikers need minutes.
You know, and just, like, throw money at him. Just buy you guys, you know, so you'd have all this. Because, you know, you guys are trying to make all these phone calls to the States. And, I remember it was just, it was like, there's no handbook for this. No one's ever walked through anything like this.
And there were, like, people we didn't even know. Like, we'd get, like, people reaching out to us on Facebook. Like, hey, I heard about your daughter. We're praying for her. Or, hey, like, we have this connection, you know, like. Let me put you in contact with this person. They might be able to help you. Like, just, like, really the community of God working the way it's supposed to. In that time, that was just, like, such a gift. So, actually, a friend of Joe's from college, like, heard about it. And he started, like, an online fundraiser for us. And we he raised, I don't know, like, $60,000 in 3 days. So we had the money to, like, medically evacuate her from the country. And so just saw God provide in these, like, really huge ways that were really cool.
Over the top. Yeah, for sure. Well, I know we've talked about this, that God's provision is so rich in this story, but I want you to talk a little bit more about not only how God provided financially, but also emotionally and spiritually.
Yeah. I mean, I talked a little bit about like the peace, yeah. right? Yeah. And yeah, I feel like it probably wasn't until like a year later that I really started to feel the weight of everything that had happened and started to experience like the grief and even like guilt over what had happened, even though there was really no reason for me to feel guilt, but just like these strange emotions where I was like, oh my goodness, like what's going on? Mm-hmm. You know, guilt over the fact that like I could only see Hannah 2 times a day, 30 minutes each day for her first week of her life. Like that was something that really tore me apart, you know, like especially, you know, after we had our second daughter, you know, it's like I'm holding her, like she's on my chest all the time. Like that feels right, you know, like being away from your child.
Separation doesn't feel right.
Yeah. Yeah, that was definitely like the hardest part of it all for me. It had been like one significant thing I remember. It had been almost a week. And then it was Dia de Independencia, like the Independence Day for the Dominican Republic, and everything shut down. So it was like a day where we're like, could get nothing figured out. And I was so frustrated. I was so that was like,
Your daughter's still in the NICU.
Yeah.
She's still having seizures. You don't have a plan.
Yeah. I mean, she's still having this really low blood sugar that, you know, we don't know what that's going to look like for her. Like, is it causing brain damage? We don't know. Like, what's her future going to be like? And everything's shut down. So I think that was the first time that I, like, discouragement really set in for me. And it was, like, time for us to go and see Hannah. And Joe and I get in a fight.
Of course.
Because I'm like, come on, let's go. And he's like, I can't. Like, I need to figure something. You know, like, he was just, like, tirelessly working, trying to figure things out and, you know, like staying up all night, like on his computer, like making contacts, all these things. And while he was doing that, I was praying.
Yeah.
And I prayed a lot during that time. And so I think like our ways of dealing with it were different. And in that moment, he was like, you're just doing this, so I need to do all this. You know, like we said some words that we like definitely regretted.
Yeah, for sure. And you got all this stress on top of you. I mean, incredible stress that you probably had never dealt with before to that extent, you know?
Absolutely. And so I like go down to the NICU by myself and left Joe behind, and I go to get in there and they won't let me in because there's something going on with one of the other children in there. And I'm like, is it my child? Like, what's going on?
Yeah.
And I'm sitting outside. I'm just like bawling, like my head between my, you know, my knees, just like crying, like my whole body. And another dad of one of the kids in the NICU walks up and, you know, he's just like, how you doing? And, you know, this is all in Spanish. And I was just like, I just don't know what to do. Like, she needs to be in the States. We can't get her to the States. Like, I just feel so hopeless right now. And, sorry. And he, says to me, don't worry. God is about to open the floodgates of heaven upon your little girl. And, you know, like he said it in Spanish, but I heard it in English. Like, I still to this day don't even know what the words for floodgates are in Spanish, but like God in that moment knew what I needed and like gave me this new hope. And I was just like, okay. And I just believed him. I was like, okay. And then I like, then the door opened. I was able to go in and see Hannah and hold my baby for 30 minutes.
Yeah.
And then we go back up. I go back up afterwards to Joe, and then we get this phone call. And it's from the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. And they tell us that they are going to take Hannah on as a charity case. And they're going to pay for everything. They're going to send down their jet and pick her up. And they're going to take her and they're going to take care of all of her medical needs for free.
Yeah.
And I'm just like,
What?
Wait, what? And then, like...
The floodgates have opened.
Yes. And then, like, I think maybe, like, 30 minutes later or an hour later, we get another phone call from a hospital in Texas where the same thing, like, actually, our friend Maggie, I think her parents were, like, helping out with, like, trying to get her
into
this.
Have, like, options.
We literally have options of hospitals, and the hospital in Philadelphia is one of two hospitals in the entire U.S. that has a hyperinsulinism center. And so by that point, we kind of felt like, okay, low blood sugar, probably this hyperinsulinism is what, like, the people we talked to were saying.
That was what she had. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, like, CHOP, Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, had one of these. And, it was just amazing. And then, you know, another, like, way God provided was, like, the head of the Hyperinsulinism Center at CHOP was a native Spanish speaker. So here she is talking, you know, in her native language with Hannah's endocrinologist in the DR, like, telling her, like, here's what you can do, like, all these things. And then, like, a day later, Hannah was in Philly.
Crazy.
So to bring it back to, like, the women's retreat and the fear, like, I can't imagine going through that whole time.
Yeah.
Had God not done that transformative work in me a month earlier, literally a month earlier, where, like, if I had been still walking in that, like, you know, like, fists clenched, fear.
Yeah.
I can't imagine what that would have, that time would have looked like for me, but instead, like, it was just this time of peace and, like, definitely some ups and downs, but just seeing God miraculously provide for our little girl.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's crazy. It's crazy to think about all of those things, how it transpired, just God's hand at work, and to look back on that. And I think about just how good God is to, like, give us that truth and where, you know, he tells us to store this up in our hearts, you know, and it's like, sometimes we go through seasons of, you know, plenty. And then sometimes we go through seasons of want or famine, you know, and spiritually speaking. And I think that it's almost like God just, you know, gave you this weekend leading into this, you know, of abundance and like filled your storehouses, you know, and then you enter into this season of like, just what in the world? This is not even sort of what I was expecting. Like, Whitney and Tim had this smooth experience with Charlotte. Like,
like, nobody goes into parenthood thinking, like, your child's going to have this, you know, have this rare disease, right? Yeah. Like, hyperinsulinism affects 1 in 50,000 births. Like, it's just something that's not, you don't hear about. You know, even as she got older, you know, like, we'd have to educate doctors on her condition because they like, never I don't seen know anyone. About
this. Yeah, exactly.
You know, they heard about it in med school, but
We'll be back in just a minute after a word from our sponsor.
Today's episode is sponsored by Eric Lehman at Thrivent Financial.
Whitney and I became members with Thrivent a couple of years ago, right before I went skydiving. And then she sent me on a ski trip by myself with some buddies. So I have the feeling that she wanted the life insurance policy just in case things went awry, if you know what I mean. Wink, wink, nod, nod.
Listen, I am married to someone I know is an adventurous spirit who I think you said the other day, if there's not a chance I could die, it's not exciting for me or something along those lines. But back to the ad, okay? So seriously, we really are big fans of Thrivent. Not only does Thrivent offer a range of financial services from, like we talked about, life insurance to retirement plans, they also encourage you to give back to your community through something called action teams.
And through these action teams, they actually provide resources and funds to help you meet needs in your local community. So it's really nice. I am being held hostage right now, so this is a cry for help. Somebody help me.
Stop it. So if you're interested, look into a Thrivent near you at www.thrivent.com.
Help me.
And now back to the conversation.
So fast forward to now, because I'm sure people want to know about how is Hannah now? And sweet Hannah is 8 years old now.
Yep.
And she's thriving.
Yeah.
And in many ways, she is a quote unquote normal kid on the surface. But one thing that we talk about is just the unique challenges of raising a kid with special needs.
Yeah.
And I'd love for you to talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. So, yeah, like just, I think to start, every parent wants their children to be, you know, quote unquote normal. And that just wasn't our experience with Hannah, like having a child with a rare disease and all that, you know, brought about. It was just totally different than, any of our expectations. Right. Yeah. I mean, yeah, it was hard. Like, you know, once she got to the preschool age, preschools turned her away because of her condition, because they didn't want to be stuck with the liability if something happened to her. And just being like, this isn't, no, like, this isn't fair. Like, what do you mean you're not going to take my daughter? Or, just different things like that. Like, just so many extra doctor's appointments. You know, she spent a lot of time in the emergency room her first couple of years due to low blood sugar because, you know, she get a stomach virus, which, you know, kids do often because, you know, when they're one, two, three, they're putting things in their mouth. And so every time she got, like, sick like that, we were in the hospital and in the ER and, you know, she has to get her, her, the stuff to help her kind of, like, run, like, allow the illness to run its course before she could go back home. Otherwise, you know, her blood sugar would drop. So,
And then even just through that, I remember, you know, talking about how her, it was evident that her brain was developing differently, you know, like the, and as you had other children too, you could see like there's a different, who didn't have hyperinsulinism, there's a difference in how her brain is developing, how she's responding to situations. And this is, you know, some of it, you know, was, okay, you guys would say, I wonder if this is related to some of those first days, right? Of her not having, you know, that having that low blood sugar in her brain and some of the delay and the developmental shifts that took place, you know?
So there, you know, like, so we have this diagnosis of hyperinsulinism, but then like more diagnoses come, right? Like, and so then, like she has to get these like developmental checkups every year or so. And, you know, they're like, well, we think she has hypotonia. I think that's what it's called.
I forget.
There's so many things. You know, and then, it just, then there was a time, like, this doctor was like, so how would you feel if I told you your daughter has ADHD? And I'm like, what do you mean, how would I feel? Like, that's the worst way to put that ever. Like, how would you feel? Like, come on. And I think, like, every single diagnosis just felt like we were getting further and further away from normal. You know, like, I just wanted my daughter to have this normal experience. But, like, it was just so far from that. So, I think there were times where I just was, like, feeling a little discouraged by that. And, you know, like, look at other kids her age and the milestones they're meeting, and she's not. But one thing that, like, kind of helped me to get through that time was something from John 9:3 that Jesus says his disciples are asking him about this blind man, right? And they're like, why is he blind? Is it because of his parents' sin or his sin? And Jesus says, neither this man nor his parents sin, but this happened so that the works of God might be displayed in him. And I was just, I feel like that was something God gave me for Hannah, like, this, my works are going to be displayed through Hannah, and they already had, like, in a really mighty way. And so whenever I was feeling discouraged, I would, like, I just needed to remember, like, God, you have provided so much for my little girl. Like, you're not going to stop now. Like, you know, and so just, like, holding on to that, that truth of, like, God really loves this girl and he has some big plans for her.
Totally.
But, you know, there's definitely been the difficulties. Like, relationships have been hard for her. School's been hard for her. But, like, every single thing that's been hard has also been a reason for, like, much rejoicing for when she does, you know, like, meet that. You know, like, reading was really hard for her. But then, like, all of a sudden, you know, like, she had some extra help with it at school. But then, like, when she did, it was just like, oh my, you know, like, yeah. We're just like jumping with joy. Absolutely. Like, Hannah, you did it. And yeah. She's like just our little overcomer. She's so perseverant. Like
it's amazing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
We knew we were going to cry.
I know, I'm sorry.
Yeah. We're not going to apologize for listening. This is just the real deal, you guys. This is the raw mm-hmm. truth of the bittersweet, mm-hmm. of the beauty of it and the mm-hmm. heart of it, yeah. and all of it.
Yeah. I think too, though, like, yeah, like there was also time where I needed to take time to maybe like grieve yeah. over.
Yeah.
Like my original expectations for her life. And kind of come to accept our new normal.
Yeah.
Like all the things that came along with hyperinsulinism and then all these other diagnoses is like, okay, yeah. like mm-hmm. I need to grieve over what could have been, but now I need yeah. to accept and then like kind of move on and grow mm-hmm. and like,
yeah.
and lean into this new normal.
Just
this,
embrace it.
That yeah. can be just as beautiful yeah. as anything.
Exactly.
Yeah.
For sure.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to ask that question and you kind of just started to answer it, but just how would you encourage other parents mm-hmm. with mm-hmm. children of special needs?
Yeah, I guess. I think that I definitely had a little bit of like PTSD mm-hmm. from Hannah's whole like birth experience yeah. in those next couple weeks of her life. And actually, at another women's retreat, it's crazy. God, like, does some real work in me at women's retreats. But this woman was talking about her experience with cancer and PTSD, mm-hmm. but then she shared about this thing called PTGS, which it stands for post-traumatic growth syndrome. Mm-hmm. And I don't even know if it's a real thing, but it sounded good to me.
She might have been lying to me.
And it was all, you know, and it's that the kind of what I just talked about, like grieving and then accepting and admitting and then like growing and then kind of coming to this place of like joy that you didn't know was possible after those hard things. Yeah. And I feel like God brought me on that path. And yeah, I did go through those steps of like, and sometimes I fall back into them and I grieve a little more when there's like hard things that come up. But, I think it is possible to experience joy. And those people who know Hannah, like she is joy. She's the epitome of joy. Yeah. She's my little joy bomb.
Yeah.
And,
joy bomb. That's a good word.
Yeah. She's got a lot of energy.
Yeah.
But, she went to gymnastics camp this week and like the first day Joe took a little picture of them. And I mean, literally she's like smiling with her whole body. Like you feel like it's just going to burst out of her.
She's
like
going to explode.
Yes. Like she's just like, the most joyful, kid. But, yeah, I think, like, for those people out there who do have kids, whether it's a rare disease or, you know, often with rare diseases, there are some special needs that arise from that. You're not alone.
Yeah.
You know, like, going back to that Joshua 1:9 verse, like, he will never leave you nor forsake you. He is with you. And every step of the way, like, God's made that evident to me.
Mm.
And, he's been with her too, you know,
Right.
So you're not alone. And I think like another thing that's been really helpful for us is, finding support groups.
Yeah.
And so like we got connected. I mean, the HI community is fairly small just with Athena rare disease, but like we got connected on Facebook to like a parent support group. And that's been huge. Like just having people with the same experience. Like, I think it's so easy to feel like we're the only ones going through this.
Right.
And like when you can connect with other people who are going through something similar and like, hey, ask questions or what do you guys do for this and that? Like, that's just been like, that's been hugely helpful.
Yeah.
I think another thing would just be that, like when you have a kid with this hard stuff going on, like you have to be their greatest advocate.
Absolutely.
As I mentioned before, like there have been doctors who, you know, like they don't even know what her disease is. Or like there was one time a doctor, one of the side effects of the medicine that Hannah takes is hair growth. And so this doctor was like, well, she's got all this hair growth. Like you're probably just going to want to we're just going to probably want to do a pancreatectomy so she doesn't have to deal with this. I'm like, wait, what? You want to remove like 98% of her pancreas because of hair growth? Really? Yeah. Like, no. And so then, you know, it set us on this course. Like, we need to find another doctor who's going to like...
Who understands
fully, a little bit more.
Holistically, and, the whole picture.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So you definitely have to be your child's greatest advocate.
Yeah.
And then... just remember that your child's a gift and every single child is made in the image of God.
Yeah.
And that she is special and God has a really great purpose for her.
Yeah.
Life.
Absolutely. Or him.
Or yeah. Him. Yeah. Well, I'm thinking of Hannah, course. But yeah, but like any of these kids. Yeah. Like God has a purpose for their lives too.
So what would you say to a family who maybe has quote unquote normal kids?
I think like compassion and empathy are huge, you know, like, I think like inviting them over, like even though their kids might be hard or have a lot of energy or whatever, or maybe might even break something in your house. Like, could you please just invite us over? Because I feel like not as much now, like Hannah has grown so much, but especially when she was young, it was just like, I just felt like, like afraid, like that people didn't want to have us over because of what she was, you know, because of her being a super kind of energetic and didn't know what you were going to get with her sometimes kind of kid. And so, and I think like modeling it as parents is really huge. Like you and Tim do this so well, just the way you love Hannah and like, you know, like just wrap her up in your arms and love her and celebrate her. Like, I think that our kids get so much from the way we treat others. And if you're like saying, oh gosh, like, okay, guys, gotta be careful. Like, Hannah's coming over.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's not like, then they're gonna be like on guard. And just maybe even having those conversations with your kids and like teaching them the value of loving people who are different than them is really huge. Mm. But it's been a hard,
I love that.
It's been hard at times when you just feel like, man, I think they're pulling back because of this. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So good.
Yeah.
So many more things I could ask you. Anything else that you want to share that you feel like you have on your heart that you didn't get to say yet?
I think one thing, would maybe be, I went through a time where I was really trying to hide this all. And, maybe like ashamed, which sounds awful, but like, I wanted to hide what was going on and I didn't let people in. I wanted everyone so badly to think Hannah was normal that I didn't tell them like what was going on. And so I think one thing I would just encourage people, who are in these situations is to be vulnerable, like find some safe people you can be vulnerable with and let them in on what's going on. Yeah, I spent way too much time trying to pretend like everything was okay when really I was kind of drowning.
Right, right.
Yeah. So that's definitely huge. Find some people who are going to love you and love your kid, especially for who they are.
Yeah, I love that. And then go do shark face.
Yes.
So good. Thanks.
Friends and future friends, we're back in the saddle. We haven't done this in a while.
I know. I'm all nervous.
This is the part of the episode where we flip the script, and usually Whitney's the one in control, poised with all of her perfect little interview questions, and now she has no idea what's about to happen.
I really don't.
You don't know what's coming down the pipe,
true.
Do you?
Tim has all these ridiculous questions written on his notes, and I don't get to see him before we do these outros, so I have no idea what's coming at me.
Okay, well, here it comes. What is your favorite conspiracy theory?
Oh my gosh.
This is a good one. I mean, there have been a lot.
I'm going to go like way back and go with one from like, I want to go in an age old one. What if the earth is actually flat?
Are you a flat earther?
No, I'm not. I mean, that would be pretty ignorant of me.
Why is that your favorite?
I don't know. It was just like one of the like most politically correct ones that I could think of. It's like so not real. I mean, but people are probably listening going, nope, the earth is actually flat.
Maybe it is.
I don't know. I
maybe we've all been wrong.
What if every picture of like the globe and, you know, like the earth from outer space, what if it's all propaganda?
That's right.
What if the earth is actually, it's just like one really long band-aid? Like just a long strip is what I mean. Like a slappy bracelet, but just going on for all eternity.
That's the most ridiculous thing you've ever said.
This is what happens when you put me on the spot at 11 o'clock at night.
Okay. Well, here's one you'll actually like. What is your idea of a healthy relationship? You're like the relationship person. You love relationships and wooing people and all the things. So
a healthy relationship.
What's your idea of a healthy relationship?
Man, so many things.
Not ours.
Stop it. I mean, I think it's a lot of things, right? I mean,
that's all the time we got.
So profound. No, I think it's, I mean, some of the things that come to mind are like a mutual enjoyment, a desire to honor and preserve the other person's reputation, trust. I mean, I think it's thinking about Jesus and the way that he did relationship. I think that he didn't force people to do things against their will. He was always inviting people into relationship, and he was just proving his character over time, and in that he drew people to himself, and he actively invited people into a relationship with himself. But he didn't, even though he had the resources and the means to, you know, use power or force, or he could have, you know, persuaded people to come to him, but he didn't. So I'm sure I'm not thinking of some things that I will later. But I mean, for real though, one thing that I do think from our relationship that you've taught me is probably just the ability to really listen well. Hmm. How key that is to a healthy relationship. Because I think if you really don't listen well, then how can you actually know the other person well? And how can you respond appropriately? And how can you love them the way they need to be loved if you didn't first listen to them?
So you're saying I'm a good listener?
You are a great listener, babe. I've told you.
Okay, because I have this on recording.
I've told you that.
For all the world to hear.
Oh my gosh.
This is going on the interwebs.
I've told you that.
For all times.
A lot of times. Okay. I've written it in lots of letters.
All right.
But because you're not a words person, you probably threw the notes away.
Now everybody else knows. I'm the best listener around.
You are.
Well, it's easy to listen whenever you're the only one talking.
What?
Yeah, I mean, you said I don't talk much.
That is true. That is very true. Yeah, that is true. Probably that would be another healthy relationship thing, knowing when to talk and when to be quiet. Right?
Yeah.
For sure.
Maybe I just
know. What would you say? See, this is what I always want to know.
No, you always want to know my opinions. That's not what this is about.
I do. I don't know. I would love to hear what our listeners think, but
this is kind of a one-way line.
I know. But I want people to call in right now. Anyone?
The phones Bueller? Are lighting up.
Bueller? Well, I was going to say that one conspiracy was that that narwhals exist, but that's not a conspiracy, that's real. Did you know that?
Yes.
They actually exist. I didn't learn this until a couple years ago. And when I did, I thought, like, I was being duped into believing, like, some sort of a, you know, I don't know.
You thought
they were Candyland fantasy. I was like, what?
You thought they were just a fictional animal and elf?
Yes. Yeah. Why didn't you?
I don't know. I feel like I saw it on National Geographic or something.
I mean, yeah, I probably did too. The first time I was like, that's a funny meme. Imagine if that was real. I was teaching preschool and I was like, you guys, could you imagine if narwhals were real? And one of the other teachers was like,
you're fired.
You know, narwhals are actually rare. And I was like, rare? They're rare. Okay, we gotta be done. We're done with this one. And we're out.
So ridiculous.
To find show notes for this and past episodes, or to engage on a deeper level, you can go to wovenministry.com/podcast. If you enjoy what you hear so far, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. It helps listeners find and share this feed. If you'd like to tell us what you enjoyed about this podcast or ask your hard question, you can call us at 512-815-2446. That's 512-815-2446. You'll simply leave a voicemail with what's on your mind, and we might just include your voice on a future episode. Music and editing for the show is by Callan Brown, recording and production by Tim Scarborough. I'm Whitney Scarborough, and we'll be back here with more very soon. Thanks for listening.